4ZLK and 0TR.
TR and 4ZLK, did you call me, Tom?
Roger. Oh, how you doing tonight, Shane? You working?
I'm sitting here waiting for them to finish loading me up, so I'll probably have to go here. When I do, it'll be pretty quick, but I can call you back when I get on the road if you want to, and then talk until I don't hit the repeater very well.
Sound like a winner. Not much on. I just worked a guy on sideband in Bolivia, but no big deal. He's just making contact. Good to hear you tonight. Should have a beautiful night. I guess the weather comes tomorrow, though. Do you work tomorrow?
Supposed to. I'm going to try to take it off. And one of my daughters is down in Atlanta. She had surgery yesterday, and my wife's down there with her. And I was thinking I might try to sneak out and visit them tomorrow night. They got an Airbnb down there while my daughter's in the hospital.
That's no problem at all. You just tell them Tom said to give you the day off in 0TR, and I'm sure you'll get a long ways with that.
They said, oh, yes, sir, we'll do it.
The Lord's got a place for liars, and it's a lot harder than it is down there waiting on that truck to be loaded, Shane.
I can joke around a little bit when you know I'm joking.
Yeah, I certainly was. There hasn't been much on. I got my super loop going. Now, you drop out anytime you need to. I understand. And I finally got my head on straight. When that antenna switch is at null, relay number 4 still feeds through. So if you lose power, which the signal to switch antennas is on 12 volts AC on the coax, when you lose power, it will null to relay 4, and that's where I had the super loop. And so I just come in here, put the analyzer on it, and it looks really good, Shane. And there comes Bernice with an apple and some hot caramel, I hope, a Honeycrisp.
So I'm sure she made the caramel. Did she make the apple too? Separate line that runs with the coax? Or is it run over the coax itself?
It runs over the coax itself, and that's what I like about it. It is MFJ, but I've had pretty good luck with them. And I run power through them. You got, like, on mine, well, it's an Ameritron RCS-4, Shane, and I got antenna 1 as the Wyndham, antenna 2 is the 160-meter vertical, and the Wyndham is a 160-meter one. And then the blank spot on number 3 and number 4 antenna, so that it will go to the null in case I lose power, which isn't hardly possible because I got a Generac. It's a super loop, but it does switch on the coax. You got a wall wart that I think it's a 1-amp one on 110, and that's what powers the antenna box.
Tango 4LCI.
Andy, sorry, recognizing you. Well, that sounds pretty good, Tom. So the next time you come around, I'll turn it to Andy, but the next time you come around, do people sometimes have that number 4 null? Would that be empty or like ground? You can answer that when it comes around. And you just want it to go to an antenna so you don't have to worry about it, I guess. Go ahead, Andy, N4ZLK.
Yeah, 4LCI. Well, I got a couple of questions. I wonder, last weekend, how did Tom CX do then? And the other, I've got an MFJ SWR analyzer here. Right now, everything's fine. And I heard him say, Tom, that he's got some MFJ stuff. After, say, a year from now, what are we going to do then if we have any problems? Because they're not going to keep that repair place open forever just for us.
Well, good evening, Andy. And Shane can better answer that. He told me of a place down in Georgia. And, well, just hope you don't have any problems. But it depends on the piece of equipment, I suppose. I opened up one of those antenna switches, and they got two circuit boards in there. The newer ones do have lightning protection built into them. It's a little spark gap on each one of the antennas. But I do have lightning arresters on each one of my antennas before they ever come into the house. But, Andy, I just don't know. But I think Shane has a good answer for that. And to answer your question, Shane, it would be like a single pole relay that falls back to null, which would use the normally closed contact. So if the power drops off, the relay would naturally drop out to null position, which would be normally closed to the super loop, which is on antenna output number 4. You just run one coax from your radio. Mine comes from an antenna switch in here, and I can switch from antenna out to dummy load. And there's a dummy load set down behind the desk there, one of those antenna type things. And I don't use it very often, but you can for practice or for testing. But it's just almost impossible for me to repair it, I know, and I've repaired a lot of circuit boards. It would take the factory to repair the thing. Hopefully, that never has to happen because the lightning arresters before the antenna switch. But knock on wood, that's not happened. But I think they're a pretty reliable piece of equipment. And the only ones near that, Shane, that you said the other night, are $700. I did see some in that category in DX Engineering's book. I'd have to strain a long time before I'd go for one of those. But, you know, just to run from that antenna box out to replace the super loop was 175 feet of his best. Oh, it's like, let me think. Only this was, he was out of the stranded, so I bought the solid in the LMR 400, and actually the velocity factor on it's just a little bit better than on the stranded wire. But anyways, I've had it for years, and it works good out there. But that one little piece of wire, 175 feet long, was $300 plus. And then I had to go buy some clear-coated, it's about 8-inch steel wire, stranded wire, and I run it from post to post or tree to tree to support that coax so you're not putting all that weight on that coax, and then I use tie wraps to secure it to it in 4ZLK and 0TR.
That LMR 400, like, was expensive. Connor bought, my son-in-law Connor got some LMR 400 solid. I think he got it off of eBay, about a 100-foot run of it, and a pretty good deal. But man, that stuff was—that's first time I'd worked with it. That's some good stuff. It doesn't want to bend very well. But anyway, Andy, yeah, I don't really know, other than that place in Georgia, which I think you already know about. That I think they just fixed radios. I'm not sure what'll happen about MFJ. But I need to run in here. There looks like they're about to finish up. I'm going to run in and check the load real quick and run to the bathroom one more time. So I'll be back in after a while. Andy, you take it. Tom, I'll talk to you in a little while. KI4LDI, N4ZLK. Go ahead, Andy.
Okay, KI4LZI, that place in Georgia. I sent my 8900R down there to it to be repaired, and they repaired it, and I got it programmed, or someone programmed it for me. I just got to pick it up tomorrow to put it back in the place of this and there, where I got a lot of limitations. But I don't guess, Tom, you work much DX this past weekend, because from my understanding, with the way all the fluorescences are going on and solar flares. You didn't hear too much on HF this past weekend, did you?
Andy, you're absolutely 100% correct. From about the first time in a long time, I didn't operate for about 3 days because it was just practically impossible. There might have been one or two stations on that weren't of interest to me, but they were the very, very poor contacts. Yeah, that thing was 16 times larger than the diameter of the Earth. And the diameter of the Earth is, I think, 7,192 miles or something like that, Andy. So I believe that add up to over 100,000 miles, the size of the coronal mass ejection. And it was a G5. So it was really a very, very serious event that could have affected the grid. It could have affected satellites. And it definitely could have wiped out your HF radio. So I thought I'd just better shut her down.
Wondered someone like you that does that, you ought to have the full spell on how that turned out, on how that is. I don't really have much even to receive on. Just that's about all I got here for this 718, pretty much just something to receive on. And I tell you, what little I heard, it wasn't good from what I could hear at all. And as far as that place that he was talking about down in Georgia, I don't know if they work on MFJ stuff or not. I didn't ask him about that. What I sent to him was a Yaesu 8900R where I'd blown a diode in it. And I'm supposed to be getting that tomorrow. So I don't know if he does MFJ stuff or not, but one day all of us that's got some MFJ stuff going to have to think about that. We don't hear something new from them out there soon about what we're going to do with this equipment when it gets out.
Anything they'll do with us, Andy? Shake and bake. shoot. I just don't know. Wife sitting here watching an old Western, if you hear some shooting going on. And on Grit TV over the air. I like those old shows. But, Andy, Ameritron is theirs, too. But I kind of think somebody will pick them up. I don't know. But they said they hadn't been in very good shape since the pandemic. So that's not a very attractive credentials when you hear something like that, you know.
Bell's the guy. It reminds me of some stuff that Walt KOIM's been doing over the past 3 or 4 years trying to get parts for helicopters and stuff like that. I just wonder after, if someone doesn't pick them up, what's going to come about? All this stuff that come from there, you're going to have to hope you can get it from China, or you just stuck holding a bag, you know. Possibly could be, because you think about before our time in the hobby, National, Hamlin, Helicrafters, and that's just the ones I can think off the top of my head. Now, where do you get parts for stuff like that easily and it's affordable?
DR. Well, I got all kinds of brand new parts from my Drake L4B when I had it. Matt's got it now, who called Annette tonight, and I replaced the whole power supply. Well, every time I was done, I'd put $800 into it, Andy, and then I'd give Matt a good deal on it. I only used it for a few months, and it worked like a champ, man. That Drake L4B is a good amp. And the receivers were supposedly very good. That was the first ham radio station I ever saw. Had all Drake equipment in it, and he was a mailman up in Pittsburgh, Kansas. and I was very much impressed. And he had an amplifier on it, and he was teaching his son how to operate it. I'd always wanted one, and they're still highly in demand. They're 2,000 watt input, and you can sit there and run 1,500 watts all day long if you wanted to. I never did because I do mostly Morse code. But I used it on sideband, and it worked fine. And Matt's had real good luck with it. I know he's talked all over the world with it. But, I'm hearing Charlie Papa 7DX right now from Bolivia. He hasn't got very good ears, but he's on a DX channel that is very common, 14195, Andy. But I don't know if I can throw him on. Yeah, that's him there. So he's fairly strong, but he's not hearing too many people. But he heard me. I put him on the long Wyndham. It's 265 foot long, and he answered me. But I just haven't done a whole lot in the last few days, Andy, to answer your question.
Okay, how for hell's the guy? Well, judging from what I've been hearing and all, especially this past weekend, there wasn't a whole lot to be done. I didn't really tune it to find out. There was so much racket and noise and a lot of things I was trying to hear. I couldn't, or either there was a lot of signal fade in it. And you know how well they done with the sideband. Were they able to do anything? With all that going on, I don't see how they did.
I would have said they do a lot like Mars does, and they would have to revert to Morse code, and I don't know how many code operators are on there. Rusty'd be the one that could tell you that. He runs those nets a lot, and he's very good at it, but I don't use them, but a lot of people do. All my contacts have been on my home station, and they've been by myself, and I mean, I don't wait for somebody to say, okay, make your call or something like that. It's just not something I've ever done, but a lot of guys really enjoy those nets, and it's just like everything else. Some of them enjoy that digital stuff, but I don't. I just do sideband and CW. I'm old-fashioned, I guess, Andy. Well, I guess we're in for some weather tomorrow. I hope it don't get severe. It's not supposed to.
Well, see, we're supposed to have some. Now, would it get bad or not, I don't know. I listen to that, but just for informational purposes, I'll take you. The Sky One repeater currently for this area is on 147.135. And it's got a digital tone of 311. If you ever have anything, you know, that you need to report, but like with this radio I'm talking to you on right now, it don't have the digital. It'll do analog tones, but not digital tones. This 2400HJZU, because it dates back to 1993, so you got to have a fairly new something for 2 meters to do the digital tones. That means about 2001 and newer, from my impression of what I've been told.
Well, I don't do Echolink, and I signed up for it years ago, but never did use it. But I've talked to guys on Echolink in Australia, just driving down the road out here, in several different places, quite a ways off. But I'll tell you an odd one. I had to take Bernice down to urgent care last night, and the lady's name that checked us in was, her name was Randy, R-A-N-D-I. And I told her that was a cute name. You know, usually the R-A-N-D-Y. And she looked up and seen my Navy hat, and she said, Well, I'm a CB, and we got to talking, and she had just got back from Djibouti, and I just happened to have worked Djibouti not too many weeks ago, and it's a little tiny country on the eastern side of Africa, but I thought that was unusual for a lady to be a CB, heavy equipment operator. She sure was a nice gal, and that place down there by Eastside High School is a very good urgent care, and they took care of her. She had a bug bite on her neck that had got infected, and took care of her and gave her some antibiotics and sent us on their way, and it's looking better tonight, but I just thought that was very unusual to run into a girl who was a CB. Those guys are very close to the Marines and train with them. Some stand their own perimeters and all. The world's changing there, Andy. you got fighter pilots and helicopter pilots and everything else that are ladies now, and there I found a CB.
Well, see, this ain't the Gregory Boynton era, let's put it this way, early 1940s. I know there was some things that wasn't true about that, but that particular series, Black Sheep Squadron, I loved watching that. I really did. About the real, it was based on the real Gregory Boynton there in the South Pacific there, and there was some things on that series, as you was just talking there about the ladies there about that. They showed in one episode there, and of course, back in the early 40s, women wasn't allowed to do any more other than fly from certain areas to certain areas that was considered fairly safe areas as far as not ending up getting into combat. And they showed some like that doing that, and they kind of got caught off guard, though. Some others from the Japanese happened to find them, and the squadron of the Black Sheep had to kind of save their cans, if you know what I mean.
So yeah, I still watch that on Channel 31.5 on Saturday night. True duty and combat, I love them. Sometimes 12 o'clock high, but I usually don't stay up that late. But, yeah, Gregory Boynton was actually shot down and in a prison camp. The Japanese held him, and he lived through it and was released, which your chances of living through a German prison camp were pretty good, but they were lousy getting through Japanese. They were ruthless. My uncle fought in the Solomon Islands and that, Saipan and down that area. And he didn't talk much about it, but he told us a few things that were just incredible. It really was. I think Saipan's where all those folks jumped off the cliff rather than being captured by the Americans, because they'd been lied to so much, you know. And it was sad, but I've stood right beside those F-4Us. I love them. That's my favorite plane, I think. And I was in a flight crew in the Navy, Andy, but not in a fighter plane. It was in a submarine plane, so a carrier plane, and then the P-3 Orion. But nothing like an F-4U. That gull wing is beautiful.
Well, see, you can look at the difference, and you take Boynton's plane, the F-4U, then you look at what they're using now the most up-to-date, that F-18. You know, this is like she were 2 meters here, is having a transceiver with no tone board in it. Period. Not even an analog or digital tone board, and one with whole works as different as day and night.
Boys had an F-18 now. They got F-22 Raptors, and they got the F-35. think it's called a Lightning, I'm not sure. And they're stealth aircraft. And the B-2 bomber, and they're coming out with another B-2 bomber. I can't tell you the designation, but it's already been test flighted to replace it. Because that's actually been designed and built back in the 80s. That's a very unusual, that flying wing. But now they, last week they tested a plane without a pilot in it, an F-16, and it was pilotless. And I think it actually outperformed the one with the pilot in it, Andy. Go figure.
Boy, LZI, as with everything, I guess there's pluses and minuses to it, but with this newer stuff, as electronical computer and sensorizes everything is, even though the F4U Corsair didn't have all that capability, and it depends solely on pretty much the person flying it, it at least couldn't be hacked and turned back against you back then anyway. With this stuff of today, can you be sure that it can't be done?
This is N0TR. No, you can't, but they still have instruments for safety of flight. They have turn and bank indicators, they have altimeters, airspeed, rate of climb, things that are necessary, and magnetic compasses, the basics, you know. So they can navigate, and they've been really working at teaching these pilots now in case the GPS systems go out, because the Soviets are testing nuclear bombs that they can set off and destroy the satellites in up in outer space. And the Chinese, they got a carrier they're just completing that is just specifically for launching drones, Andy, because a lot of these things that are being wiped out over there in the Ukraine are being wiped out by drones, unmanned vehicles, you know. It's pretty amazing what they can do with this artificial intelligence stuff. So, nothing that surprised me anymore. But if you wipe out the GPS nowadays, you wipe out the ability of those guided bombs to hit their targets. You wipe out navigation systems. The planes I flew in, the last one was a P-3 Orion. It had gyros, and it was inertial navigation, and you'd have a hard time wiping it out. And then we had TACAM stations all around the world you could use to navigate by, but I doubt if they're still in service, to be honest with you.
Boy, LZI, yeah, the Russians have a means to destroy and jam those GPS satellites. I've heard reports where over there in Europe near Ukraine, they've done a lot of jamming at one point in time of the GPS satellites. So on that point, you're going to have to go back to some of the old-time means and doing, like some of these cruise missiles that they fly out of some of these ships and submarines. From my understanding, they depend on that GPS. Well, if the GPS ain't there, how are they going to guide them to get it anywhere near target?
Pre-programmed for their launch, so I suppose they got ways. And it's, let me mute this thing up here on the TV if I can get it muted, Andy. Hang on a second. Not a good situation at all, but yes, you're right about the electronic countermeasures. The Russians have had more success and are slightly more advanced than the United States over there in the Ukraine with what we've experienced. And that really stresses me out on their jamming abilities is what I'm talking about. So the Russians actually exceed our capabilities from the reports I've had. And that's sad. But now Putin's over there in Russia bargaining for more weapons from China. And Biden's just standing by and letting them get away with it. And there's a lot of things they could do with trade negotiations and stuff like that to stop that. But they ain't doing nothing. We're on a sinking ship, I'm afraid, Andy.
Boy, LCI, when it comes to this GPS-guided stuff, for a long time it was a good thing compared to back in World War II at Denton. But now that this GPS stuff is starting to be satellites destroyed, now jamming them, you better have a fallback system of some kind. And you know, you're more up to this than I am. I've never actually been in the services. I just see this old stuff, like I was saying about Black Sheep Squadron from way before my time, and realize, yeah, it works good sometimes, but if someone finds a countermeasure to jam it, destroy it, or hack it, you're going to be back in a 1940 type situation again, and you better have some kind of backup for all this, and not just strictly GPS.
They pretty much know that, Andy. They're on top of it. The one that fascinated me the most from World War II was the P-38, and it was a twin-engine fighter, and twin booms on it, and they took off from down there, where Black Sheep was. And they flew to a place where Admiral Yamamoto was going to land. And they didn't realize we'd broken the Japanese codes. And when they got on stations, they had 30 minutes of fuel left. And they did all this with plain old magnetic compasses, Andy, just like Black Sheep Squadron. And managed to shoot down Admiral Yamamoto, who I guess was a designer of Pearl Harbor. Now, that's pretty fascinating when they only had 30 minutes on station of fuel before they had to turn back. Almost what you'd call a suicide mission. But that was the greatest generation, they say, and I have a tendency to believe that.
Shane, come on and join us,
KI4LCI. Okay, I just got on the interstate, headed south. I don't have a lot to contribute to this conversation. Except, Tom, if things go south, they'll call up the Morse code operators. You know that, right?
Now, lean back a little bit to HF Communications, and it wouldn't surprise me, Shane, because it's far better than sideband about getting through because it's so narrow band, you know. So, I hope I don't get drafted back in. That's all I can say. Go ahead, Andy.
I'll admit I don't know it. I'll admit that. But I'm not going to claim that I do either. If someone else knows it needs it, I'll gladly turn it over to them, but it seems now, from everything that I see, everything wants to go on this kind of Winlink digital stuff, where they want to send messages out that way, you know, unless you have a way to decode that right off the fly, you don't know what's being sent.
Much about Winlink, I know what it is, I just have never used it. Tom, if it gets down to me where they need to draft me for Morse code abilities, I just would tell them, you know what, we might as well just give up at that point.
Hey, I'm too old. Shoot. Well, they're way beyond that. anymore, unfortunately. But Chad was involved with satellite communications. And I don't know exactly what all they did, but I know they used a lot of the more modern, for example, spread spectrum in microwave stuff. And it was very secure. And they weren't going to intercept it, but it was very, very far ahead of this WinLink stuff you're talking about. And it was also portable. They'd go out and set it up in the field out in the middle of the desert. And but they did use satellites. I mean, they were real lifetime communications to the White House, obviously. You saw that when they killed Osama bin Laden. And but those were also very secure links. Pretty sophisticated technology. Now, I studied microwave a little bit in a school I went to, but never was proficient at it by any means. But it's pretty slick. Everything, Shane, when it gets up in those areas, changes. I mean, resistive things go capacitive and yada, yada, yada. Everything turns to different things, and that's all I can remember from school I went to back in the 80s, I guess it was, 70s or 80s. But it's pretty neat. I made a receiver to pirate a TV signal coming out of Carthage, Missouri, up to Pittsburgh, Kansas, and I made it out of a coffee can, and it worked. But then that company got some kind of injunction put in, and everybody took their parabolic dish down real quick. I didn't have a parabolic dish. I used an 18-inch fan guard, half of it, and I could intercept that TV signal with it. And I built it for a friend of mine. It's pretty fascinating. Go ahead, Andy.
K-I-4-L-C-I. Well, I don't know a lot about a lot of it, but I know our group over here has been, for the past, I guess, year and a half, something like playing a lot around with WinLink. There's various ways to do the WinLink. You can do it through VHF repeater packet systems. You can do it digitally on HF. And of course, if you got internet, it can be done by internet, but there's different means and ways to send this. There is. That's the thing about it, you know, and unless you don't have the right setup, you know, just the average Joe ain't going to hear what's being, can't copy what's being said on that. But in the case of a foreign enemy, that could be different.
Is that LK? Yeah, WinLink seems like a neat feature. I just don't have a lot of time to get into all the other modes. Right now, I'm having too much fun with Morse code, Tom, even though it's been a while. I was copying some today, but the bands have been pretty dead, as you know, the last few days, last week or so. But Tom, I wondered how long that string was you tied to that copy cam to get that signal.
They're trying to bring in Israel there on the 79020. Say again about the copy cam, Gene.
Well, I didn't copy what you just said. Did you ask me to repeat?
Yes, sir. I didn't hear the question. I was trying to copy that 4X ray 6 mic out of Israel. Boy, and you're right about the bands. They've been horrible. So I just shut it down for about 3 days, Shane. But did you have a question about that? It was a Folgers coffee can. I can remember that.
How long that string was tied to the end of the coffee can for you to be able to pick up that signal?
Well, it was a little more sophisticated than that. But the coffee can was the resonant cavity. And that's something you got to have with microwave. But I didn't have a parabolic dish, so I thought, I wonder one of these 18-inch fan guards, and we use them at work all the time, And I always had spares there because I would build the guy's fans. In fact, I got two of them here, one in the basement and one of them out in the garage. And if you provided the motor, they'd give you a switch and a handy box to put it in and a piece of portable cord and a nice Daniel Woodhead plug. And then it was yours. You could take it home if you wanted to. But they got out of control with it. Guys were bringing in one horse and a horse and a half, and we didn't have that much 110. It was all 480 three-phase or 220 or 240 three-phase. And so, of course, they were taking motors off of dryers and washers and everything else and bringing them in. And some of those dang motors like that, those single-phase ones, are pretty complicated. The wires out on them. And I didn't even know how to make them go. Now, if it was a standard split phase or permanent split phase capacitor motor or something, I could make it go. But some of those dryer motors had a bunch of wires coming out, and I didn't know how to interconnect them. Anyways, that's what it was. And it worked, actually. But I don't know if I was... I think this guy's pretty weak. He's definitely coming in from... Israel. So that's a good recommendation, by golly. Jeremy Tadjergic here was a Navy CB gal, and she just got back from Djibouti. Did you ever work in Djibouti, Shane?
And I don't even know if I'm familiar with it.
Oh. A little bitty country on the more eastern side of Africa, over towards Ethiopia, I think. I'd have to look. It's been a long time. But, yeah, I've worked them before. But I'll look it up here in a minute and tell you more where it was at. But I was just amazed that she could be a CB and a heavy equipment operator, being a she. That's because I'm an old redneck from, a long time ago, and you just never think of a lady being a heavy equipment operator. And they were about as close to being a Marine as you can get. I remember that because I had a friend that went into the CBs. They stand their own perimeters, and it's a pretty rough life. But she really likes it. And she was, probably less than 30, wouldn't you say, Bernice? Long in that area. But go ahead, Andy.
Guy, I think, judging from a deceased Tam that used to be a member of our group, WB4DPP, Cliff McLaurin, said back some years back that the Mars program uses that wind link a lot, he was saying. So we kind of was practicing here with this stuff over here. Because we first found out from some of the people we got over here that's in Mars and this both that some of the wind link's being done with Mars as well.
Okay, I'm not sure if I'm making it. I'm going to probably jump out. I'm only getting about 50%. The conditions aren't real favorable tonight. Down here around Piedmont and lower Pelzer on the way to Anderson, it's just really scratchy. So if you can hear me, I enjoyed it. Andy and Tom, I hope you guys have a good evening. If it clears up, I might jump back in, but I can't even copy what you guys are talking about. Sorry about that. N4ZLK, 73.
Good to hear you tonight, Shane. Djibouti is Djibouti, and it's up north of Ethiopia, kind of up towards the Arab Peninsula up there, Egypt and all that, and it's north of Somalia, and we've got Ethiopia and Eritrea, and then Djibouti, so it's way north of Madagascar on the eastern side of Africa. It's a tiny little country, but I guess the Navy's got something going on there, or she wouldn't have been there. All the way to the United States. That really surprised me where some of these bases are nowadays. Take care, Shane. Have a safe night. Enforce ZLK sign in 0TR, and Andy, I gotta go here pretty quick, too.
Well, I heard you talking about some of that, and I, like I said, that Black Sheep Squadron, I like that a lot, and you take somebody from the vintage time, if they were still around, or what they knew then, and put them in the seat of an F-35 fighter, they wouldn't know where to begin. They really wouldn't, to try to fly something like that. And we'll talk to you later, Shane, and both of them there. KI-4LZI.
All those glass cockpits now, Andy. My nephew, our nephew, flies 787s, and there's four big screens. They look like computer screens in front of him. And that's the glass cockpit. And, I've flown in some that had that, but all the newer planes nowadays, all the airliners and that have it. And it works really well, like you say, wouldn't be much of a matchup nowadays with one of those. But I've been to Oshkosh, to the largest, next to Paris, I think, air show in the world, 3 times. And I've stood right beside those F-4Us, like is on Bye Bye Black Sheep, and they never, ever fail to amaze me. And if you ever look at one, just think about taking off in one of those, because until that plane comes up level with the ground, those boys had to look at the side of the runway just to keep the nose running down the center of it, because it's a tail dragger, and it's tipped way back. They can't even see the runway when they take off, Andy. Take care. KI-4LZI and 0TR 73.
Ago, you may already have looked it up, I don't know, but one of the places they was at, one of Western Solomon's, Vela La Vela, and that airfield that they used, Barocoma Airfield, was on the beach. It was now used by their commercial. You know, you probably more familiar with how it was or not, but that was one of the places that they was taking off and from and coming in and landing at. KI-4LZI.
Good night, Andy. This is 0TR 73.